G'day guys, welcome to another episode of the Wealth Lab podcast with Phil and Scott. Phil, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. How are you?
Not bad. All right. We're going to be cracking into our most commonly asked FAQ type questions. We've compiled a list of the ones that we've been asked, as well as we've done a bit of Google, and I've just basically seen what are people Googling when they're trying to consider talking to an advisor. So I've put those questions together. So if you want to, if you've got some questions about talking with an advisor, this is the episode to listen to, because we are rapid fire going through those types of common questions that people have when they're online searching for an advisor and wondering what it all involves. So Phil, kick off. What is the difference between a financial planner and a financial advisor?
Absolutely nothing. Nice easy one to start with. Interchangeable terms. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think this actually comes from the US. And I've had some clients come to me in the past and they'll say things like, are you a fiduciary or fiduciary?
Oh, yep.
And this is a US specific term that's a bit different to AU. And the real difference is that anyone that's calling themselves a financial planner or financial advisor in Australia is obligated to follow the best interest duty, which we all follow when it comes to making advice. So it's the same thing as far as anyone's concerned within Aussie. That's how it works. All right. Phil, we're cracking through. Let's go. What information do I need to provide a financial planner before I meet them?
Yeah. Look, I think anything they ask for is probably the right answer. No two situations are the same. So there will be some variances, but really common things that we would need throughout the process would be, superannuation account numbers is probably a common one. Mm-hmm. Any investment accounts, insurance policies, details, all that sort of stuff that we're likely to be speaking about. I think it's really important. And prior to our meetings, we send out a short financial snapshot that we ask people to complete. That gives us a bit of background info and saves us wasting time just asking, yes or no questions or quantitative questions in the meeting. We can focus more about the exciting stuff like what you want to do and retirement and what your goals are. So, the variety of stuff, but the really standard stuff that we would need is, details of super accounts, insurance policies, any investments. Think about your goals. What's important to you? Why are you talking to us, and what do you want to achieve? That's probably the most important stuff.
Yeah. So getting those the tax fund number, superannuation member number are the slowest parts, and you also kind of got to figure them out. So that's probably where it's coming from. The fun stuff of what do you want to be in the future, how much you want to be earning from your investments, we can do in the meeting. But that background works well.
Yep.
All right. How is a financial planner paid? And then it also goes, are there any hidden fees that I should be aware of? It is an interesting one.
I think it's a good question to ask. It's always important to understand if there are any potential conflicts of interest in whoever you're dealing with. In answer to the question, how is a financial planner paid? Look, it's going to vary depending on the financial planner that you're speaking to. A lot of firms, a lot of practices will have different methodologies, I suppose.
But how do we do it?
How do we do it?
If you're engaging with us,
what happens? We charge a fee for service. It's very straightforward. It's very clear, and we're very upfront about it. So, before you decide to proceed and move forward with this, you will know exactly what any cost would be for the advice. We charge a professional fee for professional service. In some circumstances, we may receive commissions from insurance providers. They are standard percentage amount across the industry. So it's not an additional cost to you. It just allows us to provide that advice without having to charge you extra for it. But typically that's it. We're very, very straightforward, upfront, fee for service. We'll give you a quote and you'll take it or leave it.
We can also help you to review fees paid within super accounts as well. So whatever you pay us is sometimes offset with the fee savings that we can deliver through finding deals and other products.
Yep.
All right. Over to me, Phil. I'm going to change your spotlight.
Very good. What qualifications should a good financial planner have, Scott?
Oh, sorry. That was supposed to be you, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I just sort of throw you out of the bus anyway. I'll take that up because I have the appropriate screen.
You've actually got that screen share up.
I do. So look, I'll take that one over. So a financial advisor in Australia is required to have a FASEA approved degree, which I'll explain a bit more how to figure that out for you.
Can you zoom in, please? So for those that are listening, we've got an email sequence that we send people as they are welcomed into our business. And I think we've got email 3 of 6 or something like that. You get, six emails over 6 days.
Yep.
And Phil has got an email up in front of him. And FASEA stands for Financial Advisor Ethical
Standard something or other. Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up, Scott. Anyway, long story short, as a financial advisor in Australia, you need to have a FASEA approved degree at an absolute minimum. We have to have passed an exam, which was sort of a 3-hour, quite grueling process that we need to get through to prove that we know what we're doing. And any new entrants to the industry also have to spend 12 months serving as a provisional financial advisor, so supervised work, specific training plan, all that sort of stuff. So, as Scott mentioned, we make it nice and easy on you, and we send you an email showing our qualifications so you can see that we have the required qualifications. But if you want to delve a bit further, or you don't want to take our word for it, or you're speaking to someone else that has told you that they are a financial advisor, I would always highly recommend going to the Money Smart Financial Advisor Register. If you just type Financial Advisor Register into Google, you will come across this. It's a government website, and you can type in the details of anyone that's a financial advisor in Australia. And if they are not here, then they are not licensed.
So I can bring you on that one. For context, to professionalize the industry, all advisors needed to pass an exam. Mm-hmm. And it was the 12 ethical standards that was put in place. And in the government's wisdom, they did this, and then they didn't realize that then around half the financial planners in the market would leave, which seems a little odd, because then what happened is now the cost of advice has doubled.
Mm.
So unintended consequences of seeking financial advice post 2021-2023, seeking advice has doubled in cost due to the regulatory requirements. And then further on that one, then the government decided what they were going to do was this. They made everyone sit this FASEA exam, and then they closed it. So they realized it didn't work that well, so they had to shut the whole thing down. So this was a major issue, certainly during COVID as well, because all advisors needed to sit the 3-hour exam and go through it. And then it ceased operations the 31st of December. So it was a bit of a mess. But anyway, that's what they did.
Yes. Anyway. So right. Fun. Yeah, I just want to, just before we move on, sorry, a couple of really important things I just want to highlight. If you do look someone up on here, it tells you their timeline, how long they've been practicing. So you can see by looking at this, I've been doing this since when? 2011. Feels like a lifetime. It'll tell you who they work through, where they're working, what they're qualified and licensed to provide you advice on, any career history. And down here is how you tell whether or not somebody has a FASEA approved degree. You'll see the qualification there. So in my case, a graduate diploma of financial planning, and it tells you at the top that this is an approved qualification. So you need to make sure they've got one of those.
Mm.
The reason I point this out is because, we pick on the old crypto bros a fair bit and some of the stuff that's floating out there, but there is a lot of businesses or people that look and feel very much like they're a financial advisor, and they're talking about financial stuff, telling you what to do with your super, whatever. They are not licensed financial advisors. They're selling some sort of unregulated product. So anyone you're talking to that looks and feels like a financial advisor that you want to make sure is, look them up on there.
Yep. Awesome. And you really should only be taking advice from someone that issues you a statement of advice.
Exactly right.
It's kind of how it should work. I like it. Cool.
All right. Very good. All right. So Scott, can a financial planner help me with specific goals like saving or buying a house? For example.
Good question. Now, can you hang on? I got to stop up. Got to spotlight myself here. The answer is yes. We can help you create a cash flow plan. We can help you to identify that's a key goal, but we can't recommend property. So, property as an asset class, which is residential property, commercial property, individual actual house, individual stuff with four walls is outside of the scope of what financial planners can recommend. We can recommend property as an asset class, which is we recommend you invest in property as an asset class, but we're not licensed. No financial planner is licensed to recommend property specifically. You need to speak to a licensed real estate agent. So that's sort of the division there, which is some people get a little bit confused. It's also a little odd considering it's the largest asset in the country that most people hold, and we're not able to recommend it. But that's a fight that the regulators between the real estate industry and the financial planning industry can continue to duke that one out between the two of them. Predominantly, when it comes to real estate, we will ensure people have that as a clear goal, not sort of a wishy-washy sort of, oh, I'd like it, I've got some money. Is that actually a really good goal? Do you understand that it's a very, what's referred to as illiquid asset, meaning it's very difficult to sell. It's very expensive to do that transaction, buying and selling of a property. There's the stamp duty, there's the real estate, there's the time on either side. And it's just basically an asset class in which it's completely, all of your assets are in one spot. So if you have an earthquake, a fire, whatever it is, a mine moves in or moves out, then the whole area can be affected by that. So your lack of diversification. So these are things the financial planner can talk to you about. And if you say, that's fine, I'm happy to take those risks, let's go with it, then yes, that's what we can talk to you about.
Yeah. I'll just add to that too, that, it's not necessarily, yes, we can talk about investing in property as an asset class, cash flows, all that sort of stuff, but we can also help you save for a property, save your first home, that sort of stuff as well. I've got a few plans on the go at the moment for various clients where we've got savings plans in place with targets for house deposits and all that sort of gear. So that's another area that an advisor can definitely help in. This one's probably a little bit similar to what I was talking about earlier, but I'm interested to see your response, Scott. How can I verify the credibility of a planner?
Well, I would do two things. First of all, I'd check the financial advisor register, like you've done. So just financial advisor register, plug your name in. I'll note there's actually two Scott Jacksons. There's two Scott Jackson financial planners.
Is there?
I'm the one in Vic. So I guess just be mindful, if you're, James Smith, I suspect there'd be a few of those. That's a kind of interesting thing. And interesting enough, I have actually had clients get mixed up with the other Scott.
There you go.
Yeah. See, we've never met, but share the same name.
There you go.
I would say the other thing is I think Google reviews are the most honest, most clear way on getting back on a financial planner. Now there's a business called Advisor Ratings, which claims to give you an optimized understanding of financial planners. That is a for-profit organization in which the financial planner pays to be a part of it. And then they have different service levels. And, it starts with like bronze and then goes to gold. And then they're like, there's a platinum thing. And basically if you go onto the financial advisor register and you see someone with awesome ratings, they are paying to be in that space. They might be awesome, but the truest indicator of someone's background, whether how good they are, is literally just Google reviews. That's my opinion for the most honest ones.
Yeah, cool. Beautiful. Can a financial planner help me with estate planning, Scott? What do I do if I get hit by a bus?
Well, you'd hit by a bus, mate. You're out.
Yeah, well, what do my family do more to
the point? What happens if you hit by a bus and bounce?
Yeah, well.
Well, sure. We should. I'm actually really passionate about getting a good financial plan, and that financial plan then will lead to an estate plan. Estate planning is something that's usually left to the end, and I usually like to do that at the front because we can work our way back. It's certainly something we can do around considering what we're going to do with the assets, but if you were to pass away, what would have happened? Most importantly, what beneficiaries you want to consider? The specific execution and actually going through the documentation, you go through that with either a licensed solicitor or online. There's a bunch of online options that are actually pretty good. People think they're not very good, but they're actually great. So the actual documentation we don't do, but certainly talking around strategy for asset transfer and what you want to do and what maybe the risk profile looks like of the investments during the estate plan, during the process. Also, a question that does sometimes come up is say grandma's died and that there's an asset pool left behind, what do we do with the investments whilst they're sitting around? What do we just leave it in cash, or they're in these crazy high growth things? We don't know. Like, that's sometimes a conversation that also people does come up. But I think if you are coming to seek us, I really do suggest Googling a little bit around educating yourself on estate planning, and then come to us with that thought, and then we can either go into a conversation around, yeah, that's a great idea, or more, I'm not quite sure about that. Maybe here's some things you should be considering around beneficiaries, asset class, asset pools, structures.
Yep. Yeah, good answer. I also think one of the best ways a financial planner will help you with estate planning is just making sure that you've got it front of mind. Most people want to say, have you got a will, power of attorney, there's the practice. No. Actually, thank you for bringing that up. I've been meaning to do it, and then I can pester the hell out of you till you do.
I actually think the worst one is like, yeah, no, we've got a will. Where is it? Don't know. Or at the lawyer's office we met 10 years ago in that random town we used to live in. Okay, great. Yeah. So if you die, have you got access to it? Not really. No. So you don't have a will. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, we should get a new one.
Mm. Or my personal favorite. Yeah, I did one with my ex-wife. Okay. Updated? Nope. I think that might be an idea. Yep. Comes up more often than you would think. Beautiful. All right. Scott, if I'm a client of a financial advisor, what do I do if my situation changes?
Ooh, Phil. Let's say, for example, your situation has changed. Let's say financially. Let's say there's been a big financial, money's moved up or money moves down. Well, first of all, call us. Book a meeting.
Yeah.
Assuming you're an ongoing client, clients who have an ongoing fee agreement with us, who pay us ongoing, get that ongoing advice. So reach out. That's a great moment to talk to us. We will review your existing assets. We'll review your existing plan, how you're tracking towards achieving the goals you've got, and then we can make changes. Do we need to contribute more to super? Do we need to contribute less to super? Do we need to sell some assets to free up some cash? Do we need to invest some money? A great time to have us. It's a great opportunity to have us when there's a change. It's actually specifically why you would pay for us to have an ongoing advice, because we're here to help with those types of big life events.
Yeah. So, awesome.
The summary is book a meeting.
Yeah, 100%, mate. I would say to everyone, if you have to come on as a client, if you're a client of mine and you're making any significant financial decision, pick up the phone. Even if it doesn't feel important, but you're paying for us to help you with this stuff. So take advantage of it, you know? Exactly right. Cool. And how am I going to be able to track the progress of my financial plan?
Well, depends what you're doing. First of all, let's say for example, you've done a vanilla investment. So you've come to us, you have sort of advice in relation to your super. Mm-hmm. And we have recommended some contributions. We've recommended potentially you also put some surplus income into a rainy day account, and you wanted to see how things are going 10 months in, something like that. Mm-hmm. The clients will what we'll do is we'll set the plan up. We'll do a check-in call once it's all set up, and then we catch up every 12 months. So let's say 8 months in, you're sort of 4 months out from your annual review. First of all, make sure you've got your online logins. So you should have access to your super account with whoever we've recommended. Whether you've got the phone app or you've got your desktop logins, check your account, see how that's going. Make sure that you've got everything in it. Mm-hmm. Review the statement of advice we would have sent you 8 months prior. Does it still make sense? Is it still moving forwards? Are you still moving forwards on your savings journey, or are you a little short? Do you need to put a bit more money in? It's really an opportunity just to check, which is, okay, you're here. We did the plan here. You might be here, and we might be due to see you in 4 months' time. Making sure that you've just done that check in to go, yeah, no worries. I'm seeing the boys in 3 months or 5 months or whatever it is. I've got to make sure I've got my money ready to so that when we do have our meeting, we're good to go, and I can show them the progress that I've been making.
Yeah,
so awesome. So the summary is check your accounts, check the SOA, make sure you're still on the plan.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that now over to you?
That's over to me, mate. Yeah, far away.
I'm just having to do the spotlight thing here. All right. All right, Bill, how will our relationship work? Will I be working directly with you, or will it be with the team?
Yeah, good question. Team is the right answer. I'll be sitting in front of you. You're fortunate enough to have to look at my face, but sitting behind me, we've got admin assistant, there's investment committee, there's all sorts of stuff going on in the background. So there's a team of us here. And I think one of the great things about our business is, it's myself and Scott, one of us is on holidays or whatever, you've always got an experienced advisor that's available. But we're a digital business. If I'm away, Scott's there, if Scott's away, I'm there. Vice versa. If you need help with, implementation, getting your logons working, paperwork, whatever, we've got Kev that's in our admin team that can help out with all that sort of stuff. So you're definitely working with a team. There's definitely multiple points of contact that can help you.
I'll throw in, we've also got we've also got some wealth lab professional partners that we utilize. So accountants, mortgage brokers, legal specialists, there's like a hub and spoke. So if you think of yourself, you sit in the middle, we've got a professional contact for you if you need them. So do reach out as well as if you need some help with a lawyer, a estate planner, if there's a professional service that you're in need of, we will usually have a panel of people that we know and trust and can work quite well with.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yep.
Thanks, mate. I've actually kind of lost track here. So I reckon, because we've got to keep moving here at the 25-minute mark. How easy is it to exit the contract if I decide this is not right for me down the line? Are there any penalties involved?
Well, that's a good question. Again, it's going to depend who you're working with, but for us specifically, look, there's not. I would say that if for some reason you're not happy, or you're not seeing the value in what we're doing, or you've decided to go alone for whatever reason, pick up the phone and let's have a chat about it. I'm a reasonable bloke. I'm not here to pressure anyone to pay for something they don't feel like they're getting value out of, but let's make sure we're all aligned in that and there's something, whatever, and it is the right decision for you. But really, no, you can turn off that ongoing fee at any time. Generally take 30 days to actually switch off, but that ball is always in your court. But I would say, let's have a chat about it if you're thinking down that track. And all that simply mean is, anything we've set up for you, anything we're looking after, we'll remove ourselves as the advisor then, and it's down to you to look after it. So everything's sort of in your name, and it's nice, the process isn't difficult, I suppose, is the way to put it. Let's make sure it's the right decision. Let's have a chat.
Yeah, correct. It shouldn't be. It should be, but because hopefully we've done all that work up front and you've been honest with us and you've been clear with your goals, and then we've been able to help you with that goal setting. It's very rare. You'll choose to engage with us at the beginning. Yep. You choose not to. It's incredibly rare someone during the process decides not to, because by that point, we've got a really good understanding of where you want to get to in the future, and we can actually help you get there.
Yeah, exactly. Good. Right.
Can I choose my own investments or all the decisions run by you?
That is a very, very good question. If you are somebody that is particularly knowledgeable in that area or has some strongly held opinions or ideas on what you want to do, I would always say bring them to the table. I'd be more than happy to discuss anything that someone brings to me. Can you choose your own investments? Yes, but if they're a stupid idea, you'd be choosing them without my help, and I won't be your advisor.
I want to use my Raise account. I want to use my Raise or my Spaceship account.
Yeah, depending on your situation, I would probably be inclined to discuss some other options that may be more suitable for you.
so to be clear, friends, we have a bias away from the marketing. So Raise markets heavily, so does Spaceship, which actually I just got an email this morning. They're back marketing themselves, even though they got banned. So, no, they got an enforceable undertaking, not banned. But these are roll-up apps that make it very easy for you to invest funds, but they're actually kind of expensive and not that interesting. There is much simpler, more vanilla ways to invest the markets at a low cost process. You just need to talk to us, because we can help you with that. It's also incredibly unexciting, because that's what good, simple investment is. Took that away from you.
No, you're right. I do want to be clear on that too. I don't want to sound too harsh around that sort of thing. if you're somebody that is engaged in the investment process, has some knowledge around that stuff, and has some beliefs in the sort of things you want to invest in, you want to do, it should be a collaborative process, right? I'm happy to discuss anything you want to do and see if we can make it work. But having said that, if it is a really bad idea and I don't believe it's the right course of action, then I'm not going to sit here and say, yes, let's do that. I'm going to tell you what I think you should do. Ultimately, the decision's always yours, what you do. Yeah,
we should. We also don't shy away from risk. Like, if you like risk, if you're happy with, you know, some investments that can go down aggressively, that we can also put you into those investments that go up aggressively as well. Yep. It's just whenever it comes to volatility, anything that potentially could go down a lot could also go up a lot. And if we look at an investment cycle over a 10-year time frame, stock markets generally go up 7 out of those 10 years. So you generally do win having the more volatile portfolios. It just comes down to your stomach and your ability to hang on during those downturn moments. Here we go. Last question, Phil. How would you handle a portfolio in a market downturn?
Great question. It depends. It's probably the answer there as well. You know, you probably hate me. I'm never going to give a concrete answer on any of this stuff. Everybody's situation is different. But what I would say is, we would have a conversation about it. We would have a look at what the reasons are for it, right? If it's a systemic market crash because of some big, you know, macro global event, probably the right answer is just going to be, mate, just strap in and ride it out. That's what you need to do. But, you know, if it's sector specific, or maybe it's manager specific, then we would be, you know, analysing our thoughts around that, whether or not any changes need to be made. Mm. But, you know, if it's a full-blown market downturn, I mean, they happen. It's part of the course. Like, anyone that's a client for long enough, I guarantee we'll absolutely be having a conversation one year that you've had a negative return.
Wait till the Chinese invade Taiwan, and then that's the next macro one.
Mm.
It just comes back to your risk profile. We will ask you some questions, and that involves what happens if your portfolio drops 30% in a month. What are you going to do? Are you going to sit tight and cry? Are you going to seek advice, or are you going to go giddy up, let's start buying, because it's now things are
on some cash in
are on sale, because they're all a lot cheaper than they were 4 weeks ago, and it's the same assets.
Mm. Yeah, but like, in answer to that question, though, it's probably going to be different depending on the client that's sitting in front of me. But, you know, big market events, they happen. We have crashes, they happen. We know that will happen. We build a portfolio to withstand these things. Go and watch our earlier podcast on the topic.
Awesome. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening. We tried to keep this to 20 minutes. We're at 30 minutes, so apologies for that.
Beautiful.
Look, we like your questions. Keep them coming. If there's any items you are listening to this podcast and want us to go through, please let us know. Please do also hit the subscribe buttons on whatever you're receiving this, because we do see it and we do appreciate it. And, thanks so much for listening.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Cheers.